Hello and welcome to the fourth edition of Exploring Enterprise, the podcast series from the Enterprise Research Centre. I'm Dr. Vicky Belt, Deputy Director at the ERC, and today I'm joined by my colleague, Dr. Maria Wishart, Research Fellow at the ERC, Dr. Carla Toro, Associate Professor of Behavioural and Wellbeing Sciences at the University of Warwick, Sean Russell, co-investigator of the Mental Health and Productivity Pilot at Coventry University, and Tara Sankar, HR and Mental Health Lead at Tamworth-based SME Crystal Specialist Finance. The theme for today's session is a very topical one, SMEs, COVID-19 and mental health. So Maria, over to you first. The ERC is about to publish some major new research examining the issue of workplace mental health in firms in the Midlands. Can you tell us about some of the key findings coming from the research?
Yes, hi Vicky. Here at the Enterprise Research Centre, we are drawing on actually on three data sources that we've gathered over the last couple of years. First of all, back just before the pandemic, we surveyed 1,900 firms in the Midlands and we carried out 20 depth interviews to understand how employers in the Midlands of England understand and experience mental health issues. That first piece of data collection concluded just days before the first lockdown in England. So that gave us, a pre-COVID data set on these issues. During the summer lockdowns, we went back to the field and we re-interviewed some of those research participants. And so we've also got some narrative data, which allows us to explore how employers were experiencing lockdown while it was happening. And the third data source that we've generated recently is just at the beginning of this year, we ran a repeat of the original survey with 1,500 firms in the Midlands, which gives us a very interesting comparative data set with the data that we collected before COVID. So we've got some pre and if you like, during COVID data. Just to give you a feel for the headlines coming out of the research that we've done, we found that mental health related sickness absence is quite common in the firms that we surveyed. So certainly before the pandemic, around 30% of firms said that they had some kind of mental health sickness absence in their firms. And of those firms that experienced this absence, more than half told us that that sickness absence impacts on their firms. 44% of the firms we surveyed said that they offer some kind of mental health support for employees. However, only 36% of these firms said that they had somebody leading mental health issues at board level. Only a quarter of firms have actually got a budget for mental health activities in their firms, and only 22% have got a mental health plan. The other thing that we picked up was many firms, particularly smaller firms, have a strong, I would say, over-reliance on line managers to deal with mental health issues in the workplace. So it's quite often the case that these line managers are left to deal with these issues, but they don't necessarily have the training to help them to do that. Finally, we found very low awareness in the firms that we surveyed, both before and during COVID, of external sources of support for mental health in the workplace. Very low awareness and very, very low single digit adoption of these external sources of support, which are out there predominantly to help support firms to deal with mental health issues in the workplace.
Thanks, Maria. So a lot going on there and a lot coming out of the research that I'm sure we'll pick up more on today as we go through the conversation. So what, in terms of the link between mental health and productivity, can you tell us a bit more? You've hinted at it in what you've said so far, but can you tell us a bit more about what the research says on the link there?
Yes. So prior research has found that employers generally are very unaware of the prevalence of mental health issues and of the impact that these issues have on their firms. Now, back at the beginning of 2020, Deloitte put a cost of mental health issues in the UK workplace at around £45 billion a year. And they calculated that on the basis, obviously, of the cost of mental health absence and replacing people who leave because of mental health issues. But they also included in that a calculation on presenteeism. And presenteeism is when people are actually at work, but they're not performing as expected because they're working when they're ill,
or when they're working beyond their contracted hours. So Deloitte said that all of that is costing UK businesses around $45 billion a year. And our own ERC econometric analysis last year found a strong and significant association between mental health sickness absence and firm level productivity. And just to give you a feel for that, I mentioned earlier that 30% of firms reported that mental health sickness, that had experienced mental health sickness. Well, for those firms, that mental health sickness absence was associated with reduced productivity of around 18.5%. And for the firms which felt that mental health absence impacted on their firms, that reduction in productivity went up to 24.5%. So we're looking at some quite significant and strong associations between mental health sickness and productivity.
Wow, so big considerations here for employers, definitely. And presumably the pandemic's had a real impact on that even further.
So we know from the pandemic that more than 70% of businesses said that the COVID changed the way that they ran their businesses. Businesses were going online for sales. 60% of people said that staff were working remotely. 85% said that meetings were pretty much all done online. So I think the new ways of working are extremely likely to have impacted on this, and we will likely, when we repeat these analyses, see an even greater effect of mental health issues on productivity at the firm level.
Okay, turning to you now, Carla. As someone who's focused on mental health research for over 20 years, what does some of the wider evidence tell us about how the pandemic's affected mental health amongst employees?
Thanks for having me, Vicky. So that's a really good question. There's been a huge amount of research on mental health since the pandemic. There's been a study that really is striking and relevant to this research carried out in the UK and surveying over 20,000 people during the first lockdown, so over a period of 14 weeks. The respondents responded to their mental health symptoms during that period. And what was interesting was that about 70% had quite low levels of symptoms, and those symptoms remained that way. But regarding the other about 30%, there was just under 10% who had high levels of mental health symptoms. So we're talking here clinical levels, probably already in contact with mental health services. And these individuals actually experienced their mental health problems becoming worse during that 14-week period. And then there was the remaining about 20%, and some of those, they could be divided into two groups. So some of those kind of remain the same, and others, their mental health symptoms worsened during the lockdown. And then once the lockdown measures started to loosen, their mental health started to improve. So that was encouraging for those. So if you translate that to the worst, that probably about one in four employees are maybe experiencing levels of mental health symptoms that we really need to be taking seriously. And also those who already have mental health problems, their mental health may have worsened. And again, that's something really important for employers to look out for.
Yes, certainly is. And do we know about how different groups might have been affected differently in terms of, you know, men and women and different age groups?
Yeah, so that's a really interesting question. So out of those who remained well, they tended to be older and more likely to be male. So that kind of around the 70% mark. And of the others, more likely to be female, more likely to be younger, more likely to be carers. And that kind of echoes with a lot of other findings from other countries as well.
And if I was an employer, what kind of things might I need to look out for? Because you may not always notice that someone was struggling at work, but I guess there are some telltale signs. So what kind of things should employers look out for?
That's a really difficult one to answer, because I think that with mental health problems, you could call it a silent problem. A lot of people may not be sharing their problems with others in the workplace, and that's an issue. I think that the measures that Maria mentioned, so the absence and presenteeism, are probably indicators that do give us insights into mental health problems in the workplace. So taking sick leave, I believe that sick leave most often in many organisations is due to mental health problems, if not musculoskeletal problems. And presenteeism, so essentially being at work when really people should be taking time off work to recover. That's a real issue, and that's a huge cost, as Maria suggested from the Deloitte report, to employers. So it's, I think that Maria's comment about line managers having the onus to look out for this is really hard as well, because Maria hinted at this, that a lot of line managers might not necessarily be trained to look out for signs and symptoms, and also know how to support their employees. So that's a really tricky one, and probably something that the organisational interventions could help with.
So that's quite good in a way of going over to you next, Sean, in terms of a link, because you've got a lot of experience, I know, in developing and implementing mental health programmes in the Midlands, which are aimed at improving wellbeing at work. And that's been going on for a number of years, I believe, since way before the pandemic. So could you tell us a bit more about some of those and perhaps why they're so important?
Yeah, thank you, Vicky. And it's great to be here today, especially among so many esteemed guests, really. And so I've been in this space probably for about 6-7 years now, trying to understand actually how do we enable businesses to look after their people better. And my ambition really is to make mental health a friendly place to work. So it's, you have a mentally friendly places of work going forward, because actually we know that happy places create more productivity. So from the very early days when I got involved in this piece of work, it was really to start to think about actually what were the key ingredients that were necessary and why weren't firms looking after it. And I've spent 36 years in work and trying to understand actually what's been good and what hasn't been, and trying to recognise what is it that we can do to support businesses. So we recognise that actually the mental health element was probably one of the most tricky elements for people to think about, because actually it's not necessarily a visible disability. And whenever someone is off with a broken leg or a broken arm, actually it's really easy to treat, it's really easy to see, and for workplaces can really manage that intervention very, very well. And that's actually, if you think about the physical workplace, actually the Health and Safety at Work Act actually supported that agenda for many, many years. You know, since 1974, we've been pushing about making sure people were physical first aid trained to treat people who had heart attacks in the office or who had a cut in the office. And we did lots and lots of work around that. But the parity of esteem wasn't there for mental health. And what we've recognised is actually we've seen probably the conversation over the last 10 years, supported by people like the Royal Family, people coming out and celebrities talking about mental health more openly now, it is starting to open that conversation. But we knew that businesses didn't have the ability to do that. And what we also found is particularly for small and medium enterprises, where 95% of our businesses are in that category under 250 people, you've described already that the people actually having to deal with that would either be the HR team, if you've got one, or the line manager. And actually we felt that actually wasn't enough information for those to be able to do that. So I've really spent the last few years trying to develop programs to enable businesses to have the tools to do exactly that. You've talked at the very beginning about only 30% of the organizations have an executive lead talking about mental health in that space. We're trying to rectify that and say actually it should be compulsory for everybody. And the same for line managers, giving line managers the tools. We don't want them to be street corner psychiatrists or psychologists. That's not what we're training them to be, but actually have an awareness around what they can do to support the individual and signpost them when they recognise something's not right. And then finally, a little bit of an asset-based approach to making sure that people can self-care. That's really, really important, because actually if we look after ourselves and keep ourselves well, actually in all of that space, it'd be really important going forward. And using businesses to help that will help to reduce some of the health inequalities that we've experienced, particularly during the pandemic too. So I'm trying to think about actually all of those things, bringing it all together into a way that we can provide a toolkits and support for the businesses going forward.
Could you tell us, Sean, a bit about the initiative which you're involved in now, which is the mental health and poverty pilot in the Midlands?
Yeah, lovely. So there's two things really. So I started off at the West Midlands Combined Authority leading Thrive at Work. And Thrive at Work was a toolkit where we were giving it free to businesses, smaller, medium and large organisations to create effectively a strategy and then an action plan that enabled them to look after their well-being. Recognising if you just focused on the mental health element, it'd be really, really difficult. So what we tried to do is to weave that into some of the more holistic well-being processes around physical activity, musculoskeletal and some of the lifestyle choices. And then actually we had an opportunity to join forces with a number of universities and with Mind, the national charity, and partners around the region to really think about how do we amplify that work through the Mental Health and Productivity Programme, which is what we're doing across the East and West Midlands now. And what we're creating now is two things. First of all, we're creating new innovation where we're testing new interventions. So we're trying to understand what can we do to give people things that might help them, line managers manage better, people to think about how they rest and sleep better. Disorderly eating is a real challenge for people who are in the office space and actually how they can think about doing something better, which will fulfill their daily business. Right the way through to building a sort of a strategy, which is the Thrive at Work programme or the Mind Mental Health at Work commitment. And all of those sort of in a space where we're trying to develop that mentally friendly workplace. And things like developing campaigns that start to chat, you know, Bridge the Gap, Start a Chat campaign, which really get people starting to talk about mental health in the workplace, because it shouldn't be seen as a taboo. As we've already described, one in four of us will experience it at some time. So actually, how do we make it a common parlance that it's okay not to be okay? But actually, it's about how do we, when we, what do we do when we're in that space?
Great. Thanks, Sean. It's great to hear about all that work that's going on. But I think it's time to hear from an actual small business. So turning to you, Tara, I know that you work for a small business that has actively implemented a range of wellbeing initiatives since the pandemic struck. So I wondered, first of all, could you tell us why you felt the need to take action?
Thanks again for inviting me to join in the chat about this, because it's something that we feel really strongly about and we're really glad to be involved. We're lucky where we are as a small business that we have a student management team that is quite invested in the company culture and making sure that we have a culture that's open and honest and has lots of communication. So that was the first kind of start. And we had some basic bits of well-being, sort of awareness days and things like that we'd already been doing in the office before the pandemic. And then obviously as the pandemic hit, we switched from being in a kind of big open plan office to moving to everyone working from home overnight. So the first question really was, how do we keep that team culture going, even though we're no longer all physically together? And then coming back to something that's been mentioned a lot already, how do we support the staff when we can't physically see them? Because as you said, you know, the over-reliance on line managers and things like that, a lot of what happens is you will notice that someone's quieter than usual. You'll notice that someone's maybe, you know, not being as involved as they would be normally, or maybe they haven't eaten lunch and it's kind of triggered you to notice that there's something wrong. And obviously now working separately in different environments, it's really hard to pick up on those little cues that you would normally. So we needed to react quickly, be creative, and kind of think about all these extra things that we could do to provide support for everybody when they're not physically together anymore. So we really wanted to work together with the senior management team and myself to come up with new initiatives. And in a way, that kind of helped me throughout the pandemic as well, because I had a sort of mission, as it was, to create things for the staff to do and to bring them together and see how we could support them.
And could you tell us a bit about the work that your staff do? Because I think their work is potentially quite stressful, so that perhaps added to the need to put something in place.
Yeah, definitely. So we work in the financial services market, specifically in property. So, the mortgage market is a difficult one anyway. Usually 90% of the customers that you're dealing with are going through a major life change. So they might be moving house, you know, it might be someone's lost a relative and the property's being sold. It could be someone getting divorced. So already as an advisor on a transaction like that, you're you've kind of absorbed some of that, some of those issues. And then with the market sort of being stuck during the pandemic, and not being able to move the transactions forward, you know, there's a lot of stress there from the customers that then comes into the staff, who also can't really do anything because nothing's moving. So there's a lot of pressure, you know, and it's high value transactions as well a lot of the time. So it does come with its own unique pressures, which is something that we've looked to engage with our customers as well as our staff, is supporting them.
And how did you get the whole thing started? Did you seek any external support with the initiatives you put into place?
So we started with, we formed a small sort of internal committee, which was myself and some of the managers, working together to see what we could do. And from there, we connected with Mind. So we had someone from Mind join our kind of little wellbeing committee that we did together, and provide some support and ideas about what we could do going forward, and kind of resources that we could use, which was really helpful. And then following on from that is when we learned about the mental health and productivity pilot that Sean's already mentioned. So we were very keen to get involved in that as well. That's been great, working with small businesses in the local area and kind of sharing our resources and sharing ideas and picking up things that we can all try and implement and hopefully encourage other businesses to use as well.
And can you give us a sort of flavour of some of the key initiatives you've put into place and how they've worked?
So we've done lots of different things. Obviously, during lockdown, it was a lot of online things that we had to sort of do because we couldn't physically get together. So we started off doing, like everybody, I think, quizzes and things like that, to get Zoom quizzes to get people in touch with each other. But we also did things like online yoga. We did some mindfulness techniques, some campaigns about sleep and things like that, because obviously people were not just worried about work, but also worried about their health, the health of their loved ones, etc. And it can take a toll on things like that. So we did those. We also did, similar to what Sean mentioned earlier, we did lots of things about physical health and how that links to your mental health. So we did step challenges, which was great. We did this summer, we did a summer self-care challenge, which was all focused on drinking more water, eating more healthily, and moving more, and how that can have a positive effect on your mental health. So we've done lots of bits and pieces. And then in terms of sort of at a higher level, we've implemented lots of things strategically in the business as well. So one thing that's just been mentioned was line managers not having any training. So we're currently doing that at the moment, training all our line managers to have a better understanding of how to respond. We've trained two staff, including myself, mental health first aiders. And we've implemented a sort of wellness section in all our one-to-ones as well, so that they're not just asked about their productivity, they're also asked about how they're feeling, how the working environment affects their mental health.
Great, thank you, Tara. And turning back to you, Carla, you obviously are involved in some initiatives too as part of the Mental Health Productivity Pilot programme. Could you give us an idea of some of the things you're doing too there, which perhaps some of them are quite similar to the kinds of initiatives they've put in place at Crystal Finance?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think this follows on from Sean's introduction to MHPP and the innovation. So there's six trials that are testing that something that's quite new, novel, there's universities from across the East and West Midlands involved, and also Mind, the mental health charity. And three of those that we're leading at Warwick involve working with people who may not in actual fact have high levels of mental health problems. So they might actually be functioning okay on a day-to-day basis. But we're aiming to support people at that stage so that to prevent the problems becoming worse. And I think that working with local businesses has been really a big eye-opener, and really great to hear about the initiatives that are already ongoing in those businesses. And in actual fact, some of the trials do incorporate some of the things that Tara mentioned as part of the evidence-based intervention. So it's really interesting. You know, I think that keeping physically active and, you know, the whole mindfulness thing is really important. And there are elements of those in some of those interventions. And the other thing about working with the local employers is that we want to learn a lot from these trials. So we want to understand who takes up the offer of these trials and who doesn't and why, and really try and examine how we could make these trials more attractive to organisations and to employees, so that in the future we can recruit really highly and support as many people as we can. So regarding the people who we're trying to support, it's people with anxiety, sleep problems, depression, and also, as Sean mentioned, eating problems as well. So there's a whole broad range of symptoms that we're aiming to support. So yeah, it's really interesting. And these are all described on the MHPP website. So that's mhpp.me.
Thanks, Carla. So how will you know too whether these initiatives are making a difference?
So we will be measuring mental health symptoms for the duration. So we'll have baseline measures, and then after the end of the trials, and we'll also be taking follow-up measures as well, 3 months after. But not only mental health, it's also well-being. We also want to try and measure the value of improved well-being and what that impact that could have in terms of a financial impact and a financial boost to businesses. So it isn't just about productivity, but all these other things that we're looking at in these pilot studies and how we can determine the value that will provide to businesses related to productivity. You know, that sort of, when somebody's well, they're more likely to develop skills that are useful for the business. If they're not so well, less so. We from these pilot studies, we just want to measure as much as we can to try and get some interpretations and know how we can move forwards and make these better a second time around.
And Tara, you've been obviously living this in your workplace. Do you have any sort of feel for how your initiatives have impacted on the organisation and the employees?
Yeah, I think we've definitely seen an increase in communication, open communication. So we do a lot more sort of anonymous staff surveys and things like that now more frequently, get good information back, which then allows us to, you know, implement better practices, which make them feel better in the office. And there's definitely an improvement in engagement across the team, even when they're working away from the office. You know, they all still feel part of the team. They all feel very engaged with what's going on. They feel like they can talk to anyone throughout the senior management team, which is great. And we've definitely seen a huge reduction in absence as well, since we've been doing hybrid working for the last few months, and there's been very little absence from the office because we're able to be more flexible. You know, if someone's having a day where maybe they feel like they could work but they don't really want to see people and talk all day, that's fine, work from home, we're happy for you to do that. We can give that flexibility to them now and help with that work-life balance, and it does make a huge difference to how they feel in the workplace.
Great, that's really encouraging, isn't it? Maria, I thought I might bring you back in on this point, actually, because Tara's there talking about the impact perhaps on absence. And that's something that was one of the sort of more tricky findings we found with the survey this time, wasn't it? The ERC survey, in terms of sickness figures, perhaps not being as we might have expected.
Yes, Vicky, that's right. So whereas in the first survey, which we carried out before COVID, there around 30% of firms told us that they'd experienced mental health sickness absence in the previous 12 months. In the second survey, which was carried out in sort of January this year, that had gone down from 30% to 25%. So we found fewer firms actually reporting mental health related absence, and also fewer firms saying that it impacted on their business. So 40% versus 55% said that this absence had impacted. We also saw lower reported rates of presenteeism, down from 33% to 17%. What I would say is, although fewer firms are reporting mental health sickness absence, those who are reporting it say that mental health sickness absence is a greater proportion, accounts for a greater proportion of their overall sickness absence. So clearly there's something going on there. There's also more repeated mental health sickness absence going on than there was before. And I think it's really important to contextualise this and to say really that these changes are against some seismic
changes in working practices. So we had lots of people on furlough. We had lots of people working remotely who hadn't worked remotely before. So people were perhaps less likely to report mental health sickness absence. Perhaps people were, to Tara's point, and also Carla, perhaps people were less likely to notice the changes that were taking place in colleagues because they were working in different ways. And it's always possible that actually the reason that mental health sickness absence has gone down, it is that some people's mental health actually did improve during this period because they were able to work more flexibly and they didn't have the commute and that sort of thing. So I guess overall, Vicky, it's a complex picture and it will be interesting to see how it plays out in the coming sort of months and years.
Yeah, and to make things even more complex, it feels like obviously now we've had a period where some people have actually started returning to the office and perhaps life has got a bit more normality to it over the last couple of months. So it feels like we're living through quite a lot of transition in the workplace. We've got a shift obviously to some of this more flexible working, remote working, hybrid working has been all over the news. So if we're looking ahead, what do we think are going to be the key issues in managing workplace mental health in this new normal, if we can call it that? If I can turn to you first, Sean.
Yeah, thank you, Vicky. And I think it's really interesting because you've highlighted there quite a lot of issues, really, that we're starting to see play out. And the first thing, I think we have to embrace all of the good things that we've identified through the COVID pandemic, actually. And I think we shouldn't lose that. The flexibility that's been given to businesses and the ability to go digital has been really great. And we should embrace that, actually. So I think for me, this is about actually just moving forward, developing our approaches more structured, actually, based on what an individual organisation might want now, rather than what we did and what we thought they wanted before. And I think, you know, we've had a meeting this morning between our programme group to say, actually, so we thought we knew what businesses want, but actually that was based on an old language to where we are now. So I think, you know, the things that we've got to think about now is listening to people like Tara talk. It's about actually getting that culture right in an organisation. That's fundamentally what we need to do. This is a seismic shift, as Maria has described, but it is about cultural shift now. And everybody has mental health. Some of us have good, some of us have not so good. And I think this is about understanding that going forward and having that open dialogue. But it's about recognising that at every tier of an organisation, right the way through to executive, right the way through to managers, right the way through to people on the ground, that we've all got a duty and an ability to really influence the way that an organisation operates to enable it to be and as safe and as good as it possibly can be.
And Tara, how are you handling it in your organisation now that your staff are sort of, some of them, I believe, are coming back into the office?
Yeah, so we've had, we're sort of trialling hybrid working as almost a permanent thing in the office. So for 6 months, we're going to trial it and see if it works and how people like it. And that's kind of what we've decided to do, because that also allows us to socially distance in the office, which helps. So we've been doing that and it's working really well as well. We've been able to sort of work flexibly around people's childcare schedules and, you know, maybe certain days that, you know, silly things really, like a doctor's appointment or someone coming to fix your boiler, things like that. We can now be more flexible about those sorts of things and say work from home on that day. It doesn't disrupt your work, that's great. And then they still get the added bonus of coming into the office for those other days and getting that interaction that they need from their colleagues and peers. Obviously everybody has different levels of anxiety about returning to the office as well, so one thing that we really felt strongly about was consulting with everyone before they came back about how they felt, about how many days they wanted to do in the office, you know, why they felt that way and how we could reassure them, what we could do to reassure them. So it's about kind of taking all the individual ideas into account and working with them on that. And I think they felt supported and like it was safer for them to return that way. So far it's been great and it's working really well.
Good, and lots of tips in there for other employers. And whilst we're talking of tips, we've covered such a lot of ground and I feel like we're only scraping the surface of this really, but we have to sort of turn to finish. But before we finish, can I ask you all what you think the main priorities should be for small businesses in managing their mental health, their employees over the next year? Turn to you first, Maria.
Three things really coming out of the research and for me. The first is rather obvious. I think it's we need to be looking at raising awareness of the extent of mental health issues in the workplace and the impacts that these issues have with employers, because I think we know that many employers just don't know what is going on with mental health issues in the workplace. Secondly, Sean was just talking about line managers and also Carla. I think it's important that we support employers to help them to provide training for line managers in dealing with mental health issues, and particularly for small and medium-sized enterprises. It's the line managers that are facing up to these issues, are looking out for those behaviour changes that accompany mental health challenges and are dealing with them. So more training for line managers. And thirdly, as I said at the beginning, we see very low engagement with some really excellent initiatives that are out there, including the initiatives that Sean was talking about. So I think encouraging employers to engage with these expert initiatives is an obvious thing and quite a quick win, easy win, I would have thought, going forward to help employers to deal with these issues more effectively.
Thanks, Maria. And over to you, Carla.
Thank you. So I agree absolutely with Maria's ideas. There's another two that come to mind, and one relates to the new work after the new workplace after the pandemic. So the flexible working and the benefits that could bring, and there potentially Maria was hinting at that perhaps some people may have improved mental health because of the ability to work flexibly. And I think that if businesses could maybe continue down that stream and focus on outcomes more than output. So ultimately what's delivered rather than how. And that gives employees that sort of empowerment and trust, which I think is really important to deliver, but deliver your way and the way that works for you. And that could really pass on a powerful message to employees. And the other thing is self-care. Sean mentioned it, and it's just so important. And it sounds too simplistic, but I think it's about encouraging everyone in the organization to give time to themselves as well. I think we all know how to support each other or to a degree and look out for each other, but possibly less so for yourself. And I think it's maybe trying to encourage that as well. That could be quite impactful.
Thanks, Carla. And over to you now, Sean.
Yeah, it's interesting because I'd written down five things, and actually they've all been stolen already, which is really interesting because Maria and Carla have really described where I want to be. But I go back to, I think, the bit for me, it's about there is stuff that people can do tomorrow, you know, they can do today, you know, and actually they don't have to go and think about writing a massive paper for the board. They don't need to do lots and lots of expensive work. Quite a lot of this is really, really simple. You know, you can look at the MHPP website, which Carla's described as mhpp.me, has lots of tools on there which are available, which are free and things for people to do. And I think, you know, just take the first step to sign up to that. The second bit then is actually taking that next step and saying, actually, I've had a look, now actually do something about it. And actually, you know, the Mental Health at Work commitment, the Thrive at Work commitment are both very good programs that enable you to go on a structured journey. But the other side of that actually is, you know, we can train people around mental health first aid. You know, if every organisation had mental health first aiders the same as they had physical first aiders, it would go to having that conversation more openly in the workplace. So for me, that's the final bit, really. It's just about actually having the conversation, just enabling people to feel empowered to say it's okay not to feel okay. And when you have a conversation with someone, we generally gloss over it a little bit and say, oh, how are you feeling? Are you okay? And then we walk off and make a cup of tea. We don't actually listen for the response. Well, actually, the bit for me is actually, are you okay? No, are you really okay? And let's get into the conversation to make them feel part of a family. This is about how you look after your people better. And I think if you get that culture bit right, for me, that's exactly right. And none of that costs anything, actually. That's all free.
Some great advice again. And to finish, to you, Tara, as somebody who's obviously experiencing it putting this into place in your workplace. Any final priorities or tips you'd hand on to other businesses?
I think I definitely agree with what Sean just said, is that it is simple. I think what I find is that a lot of SMEs like us think that they need a huge amount of resource to be able to do something like this. And in actual fact, all you need is one little initiative that you can do, you know, an awareness day, something like that, that just starts a conversation in the workplace. And there's so much free resource out there, just on the internet, anywhere you want to look, MHPP, Mind, you know, wherever you want to look, that you can use just to implement things. You don't need a huge budget. You don't need a whole committee of people to do it, as long as, you know, you start having that conversation. So that's definitely one thing, I think. And the other thing that I always come back to is that a business is built on people, regardless of what sector you work in. So, and all those people are individuals. And as we've said, we all have mental health, and all our mental health is different, and we'll all react differently in the same situations. So it's about remembering that having these sort of rigid policies and workplaces doesn't really work when you're dealing with people that are all completely different. So being more flexible and being able to take into account what works better for the individual's mental health in the workplace, I think, is the most important part for me.
Well, I feel like we've covered so much ground, and we've got such important advice for everybody. So thank you to Tara, Maria and Sean and Carla today for that really useful and important conversation. I feel it's an issue that we're definitely going to return to. So thanks to everybody who's listened into the podcast today. If you enjoyed it and you're interested in finding out more about what we do at the ERC, please visit our website at www.enterpriseresearch.ac.uk.